Cofield and Company is at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
Oh! Like that? Was she run over like that?
James.
Uh-huh. What is Philadelphia?
Yes.
No need to rub it in.
You can't even name the backup quarterbacks at New England.
We got a problem!
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's do it. Cofield and Company, busy, busy. What day is it? Thursday. We're losing track this week. Adam Hill is with us. He's over at Pizza Rock getting ready to watch a little hockey. Well, he's going to be watching hockey at T-Mobile, but you can watch hockey tonight as the Kings are in town. Pizza Rock is the spot, especially over in Henderson, to check out hockey. If you wear your gear, you got to buy something. Buy like 10 bucks worth of stuff. You get a free beer, wear your gear, get a free beer. That's Pizza Rock, and happy hour's going on right now with food and drink as low as $4. Let's start it off.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
Exciting show today. Exciting show today. We're going to go to the SEC a little later on as Coach Joe is going to be in the 4 o'clock hour, and we're going to talk to Auburn's Bruce Pearl. That'll be in the 4 o'clock hour. Adam, I know you're fired up about this. I don't know if that means that you believe the guy's going to get results in the SEC, but Mike Leach is moving on from Wazoo. The crazy pirate has now landed at Mississippi State.
Stark Vegas. Let's go.
Oh, God, that's right. The whole stupid Stark Vegas thing.
Let's go. Listen, Mike Leach in the SEC is a dream. Mike Leach, just his personality coming to that, you know, snooty, better than you, obnoxious, you know, South. I love it. But just think of the Egg Bowl. Like Kiffin versus Leach. What a rivalry.
Amazing.
It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait.
Amazing. And, you know, the funny thing is yesterday we were talking about the San Diego State situation, which is bizarre. I don't believe Rocky Long just decided to retire 2 days after he was interviewing for D.C. jobs. But we brought up San Diego State in flux now with Brady Hoke. And we brought up Mississippi State. Like, did you have a plan? You blew out this guy Moorhead. And then all of a sudden you're scrambling because Joe Judge decided to take an NFL job over coming back to his alma mater. And they recovered very nicely. I mean, this is a great recovery. Now, that said, yes, Leach is going to be fun to follow. The fact that that league traditionally, well, up until recently, hasn't had great quarterbacks. They finally started to break through with great quarterbacks by bringing in a Big Ten transfer in Burrow, stealing a Pac-12 recruit in Tua. Obviously, Georgia has had a really good line of quarterbacks. But I wonder if Leach's style, which is not real heavy on defense, is going to work. Can he simply score 50, 60 points against those great SEC defenses and outscore people?
Well, what is this, 2002, Steve? I mean, I watched LSU and Alabama go, like, was it 75-73 or something like that?
That's a good
point,
yeah, 46-41, right?
Yeah, this is not the old SEC, I feel like. I mean, I don't know that it's going to work. I don't know that he's going to go in there and, you know, create a national champion. But I think, you know, it's not the same style of football anymore. And, listen, it's going to be fun. And I think that's what Mississippi State was looking for, because I feel like one of the reasons that they made a decision to switch was because everybody else was getting so much attention. Well, here you go. Here's your attention. That's what you want. You got it.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of jealousy with all the hype that Kiffin was getting after his first 10 days of being on the job, and no one really knows who Joe Moorhead is, and his results in year two were not that great. Here's the other thing that has to make other SEC schools unhappy. Mike Leach will have great quarterback recruits. Like, he's pieced it together in the Pacific Northwest. Now, Georgia and Alabama and LSU and Florida trying to make runs at, you know, the best quarterbacks in the South. They're going to have competition from Mississippi State. And my guess is that Leach could still recruit the West Coast if he wants. Quarterbacks are going to want to go to Mississippi State. That'll be a quarterback factory while he's there.
Yeah, I think there's no question. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, Starkville is not necessarily a much better place. But SEC, attention, a ton of talent down there. Like, he's going to find guys that are going to go on to play there. And, by the way, just show the stats of, like, your last six quarterbacks and just say, hey, you can do this too. So let's go. And so I think the talent will be upgraded, especially at that position. And they're going to have certainly a fun program and one to watch. And they're going to make a splash. That's what they wanted to do, and they're going to do it. And you know he is, no matter how they play, he's going to be interesting and entertaining and something different for people down there to cover and get excited about. So I think for all those reasons, it's a great hire for Mississippi State.
Do a little role play for me here. You can play the role of Leach or Kiffin. They're a little bit different, but I get the sense that they're both brutally honest. If I'm a parent of an African-American recruit in, say, the Northeast, the Midwest, and I'm going to go down racial lines here, and that's not to say there aren't racists in the Midwest and Northeast, but if I was a parent and I have a high-level recruit, my African-American son, and I ask Leach and Kiffin, hey, Mississippi has a terrible history of racism. I'm not so sure that that has all been extinguished. Why should my son go to a state like Mississippi and play in front of those people, Coach Leach, Coach Kiffin? What do they say?
Well, first of all, most of the kids are coming from states that don't have much better reputations necessarily.
That's why I said it. It's like, yeah. There are racists everywhere. But
kid from Alabama is going to be like...
There's no Michigan Burning movie.
Sure. Okay, that's fair. Well, first of all, I would tell you, well, I wasn't here for those.
Yeah.
I've got a track record somewhere else. I'm coming in here as a new face, breathing new life into this program and trying to, you know, move things along into the next century. I think there's all kinds of ways you could sell
right.
that.
How about, I know the way it is. I'm not comfortable either. How about you come down and we're going to educate the area. We're together going to make things better.
Sure. I don't know that you're going to have to answer all those questions from people. You know, if you're recruiting kids from Florida or Alabama.
Which to me has always been really bizarre.
Sure.
That parents don't ask. That parents aren't concerned.
Yeah, but I mean, I think people have said the same thing about Las Vegas forever, right? And it's completely
ridiculous.
Las Vegas
has different things. And, well, I mean, if you want to go racial history, sure. But, yeah, there are objections to Las Vegas, and coaches have to overcome those objections.
Right, that are ridiculous and unfounded, but people have those questions. I think questions
do get
asked.
Are you suggesting that my Mississippi concerns are unfounded?
First of all, I'm bothered by the way you take a syllable out.
Mississippi?
Mississippi.
Mississippi?
Yes, there's a middle ISS.
Mississippi? Houston?
please stop.
A lot of problems.
Yes. It's not good.
Not the best show when it comes to correct pronunciation on pretty much anything.
Anything.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of many words, but that one just bothers me for some reason.
Ari just pointed to his script for his latest update, which is coming up a little later on.
Well, let's hope there's a lot of very easy words.
Rebels go on the road last night. Running Rebels. Weird game. I didn't think there was ever a flow in the game. Boise State wins it 73-66. A guy who is, you know, very typical for the Mountain West Conference. A recruit who was not highly coveted turns into one of the league's best players. That's been the story around this league. And Boise's been a place where that's happened now multiple times. Chandler Hutchinson, a couple of years ago, turns out to be a first-round pick of the Chicago Bulls, was only recruited by... he was offered by a couple of Big West schools, not the Big East, and also some... Well, that West Coast Conference and Big West. And he went on to turn into a great player. And now this kid, Derek Alston, who is, I mean, he's skinny as hell. I think that's going to be his biggest difficulty. He's putting on weight for the NBA, but he's on the radar as a second-round pick. And at 6'9 and 180, he freaking smoked the Rebels, especially getting into the lane and drawing fouls.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, he seems to be a bit of a liability and gets pushed around a little bit too much. Yeah. But, yeah, offensively, he's a problem. And UNLV kind of found that out yesterday. I thought they were competitive. I thought they were pretty good for the most part. Just could not make shots. I mean, and especially on the road, you can't go on the road into, I don't want to say a tough environment because it wasn't, crazy last night. But you can't go on the road in altitude in this league. We know how difficult it is to win in some of these gyms, and you can't perform that poorly from the three-point line. You just can't. And I thought they got enough good looks for them to make a lot more. They just didn't. And then you have to do something else. If you're not making threes, you have to do something else exceptionally well, and they really didn't. They just played well, not really great in any particular area, and you're not going to win games like that on the road.
Yeah. Some of the problems of the offense early in the season showed up again. A lot of late shot clock trips, much too much dribbling at times. And when penetration was achieved, that sounds creepy, by Amari Hardy and Bryce Hamilton, it was having to beat their man, not really off of ball movement. And then by the time they got into the lane, then you had three guys crunching on the interior and they couldn't get the shots off. Or, you know, as we see in college basketball, apparently now charge block is 50-50, which I still don't understand.
It's so just guessing.
They got dinged for a lot of charges.
Yeah, it's just guessing. It's a completely ridiculous concept. I have said before, I don't think there should be charges, especially if you fall. Once you go to the ground, there's no charge. It's either a block or a no call.
Right.
And it'll eliminate a lot of guys just kind of standing there, not actually playing defense. There's a time when taking a charge is a defensive maneuver, but all too often it's, all right, I can't do anything. I'm just going to stand here and hope to get a call. Just don't have charge calls. Except, you know, if you're posting up and you kind of throw the elbow and throw somebody down, that's different. But on a drive, it's either a block or nothing. And I think that would fix a lot of what goes on.
I actually made, I was going to make the suggestion to John Sandler and Curtis Terry. They were talking about what to do about the whole charge block dilemma, and I was about to pop on, but you know, the action continued, and I was going to say, why don't we have coaching challenges like PI in football? Why not?
Yeah.
Can you imagine the officials on the scene or officials in a main center having to make a call and overturn charge blocks?
I mean, I can imagine it because it's such an issue.
Yeah,
like it's so bad. And I think of people that don't actually cover college basketball for a living, I probably watch more college basketball than anyone. It's a real epidemic.
Yeah.
It's a problem, and it has been for a long time. It's all over the country. It's not, oh, people are like, oh, Mountain West officials. No, because officials travel. They work all over the place. It's just a problem, and it's a very, very difficult call. You need to do something to address how to change this. It's not just, hey, the officials need to be trained better. It's a really, really tough call. But far too often, they're just guessing.
And you're right. It's not just Mountain West because, you know, for example, Bill Clinton ref. He was doing a Big Ten game early in the week, and you know, later in the week, he could be doing Pac-12 or Mountain West Conference. So, and I'm not saying he's one of the biggest violators, but yeah, charge block is definitely an issue. All right, on the way back, we'll continue talking a little basketball. We're going to go to the NBA. I'll tell you the one thing, Adam. Will you tell me what is, if Boise was going to be a top three team truly in the Mountain West Conference, what do you think they're missing from a player standpoint? No, hold on, Adam. What do you think they're missing?
What are they missing?
Yeah, if they could add one player.
I don't know.
Because what I noticed is that they're short one big. The big they have kind of stinks. You know, they could use like a Joe Furstinger, a real thug-like character, a true thug on the floor to intimidate and, you know, play defense and start trouble. They need a thug.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600. You're listening to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on here on a Thursday. We got Coach Joe to come in, talk a little college basketball. Joe Esposito in the 4 o'clock hour breakdown of the AFC playoffs in less than 10, as we'll talk to one of the ESPN.com reporters. But I'm not sure, you know, Adam, you're not too swift if you got what I was doing there going into break.
I know.
The word thug is going to be of much discussion today, and I was mentioning that Boise State could use a thug like Joe Furstinger or a thug like Grayson Allen. Now, I use that word for whites because it's not used very often for whites. It's generally connected to African Americans. And now we've got John Beilein, your guy, in hot water in Cleveland. Explain the story to the audience and where we are right now.
So a story came out that John Beilein was having a film session with players at a hotel on an off day and told them, well, it doesn't, there's a lot that doesn't quite add up to me, but
yep.
apparently it was a very negative film session. But he also told them that they are, quote, no longer playing like thugs, end quote. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that it's a negative film session, yet he's telling them positive things. I guess you do both when you're doing a session. He apparently didn't really realize what had happened. The players, according to one report, left kind of confused and quiet. Somebody went to the general manager, Altman, and said, hey, this guy called us thugs in a film session. John Beilein was then informed. He individually called, it says, 8 players and talked to them. And he said, hey, I didn't know that I said thugs. The assistants backed up the story and said he did say thugs. Beilein said, I meant to say slugs. You're not playing like slugs anymore. That is kind of where we... Right. Well, it was a compliment from the beginning. If you're not playing like thugs anymore, that's probably... Well, maybe that is negative. Maybe you're...
Actually, yeah. I think it's negative.
Yeah.
Right? That you, if you're going to go out there, we want you to freaking roughhouse and play, you know, tough. You're not playing like that anymore. But it could also be a dig because maybe you're playing too hard and you're stupid and you're fouling a lot and you're putting us in harm's way. But that is completely the opposite of... Slugs, the words aren't even close. I mean, obviously you could slip, I guess, and say thugs and slugs. But if you're saying they're not playing like slugs, that means they're playing better, that they're not playing slow, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of it confuses me. Some parts do add up. Okay, first of all, everyone on the show, if you listen to the show for any length of time, you know I am a John Beilein stan, as they would say. I think he's one of the greatest things that's ever happened to basketball. However... one of the things you also know about me, if you listen to the show, is I do believe almost any old white guy from Buffalo is racist. So, so I mean, kind of, you know, they both kind of are counterintuitive to each other, I guess, on this one. Do I think he said thugs? Yes, I do. Like, that's what I think he said. I don't know what his intent was. I don't know what he meant. This is a very tough one to unpack, but I will say that the fact that it came out means there's an issue there. Like, this could have been obviously handled very quietly and internally. It wasn't anything that was public. It was in a film session. He could have called these guys and said, hey, this is what I meant. You know that's not who I am. Let's just try to move on from this. And it could have just died down. But somebody went public with it.
Right.
So that means there is an issue in the team.
Which makes it a story. Now... You could have the take that, hey, the person going to complain is a pansy, toughen up, buttercup. You could take it like, hey, if this is a language concern for employees, then it's a company concern. And that happens at all companies, right? And times have changed. I don't know. I'll give you an example here at Lotus. I had a manager like 3 years ago was talking about some beef that I was discussing, and he said something to the effect of, stop acting like a bunch of little girls. Okay, well, one, that's sexist.
Sure.
So that expresses a certain view about women and how they fight and maybe that their battles are trivial. And two, I could take it like you're calling me less than masculine. You're calling me a woman. My view on that could also be toxic masculinity, that I'm insulted by being called a little girl. So there's a lot of, you know, language things that come up now, and I know we have a, you know, big portion of the audience who's like, who cares? Some people care.
Yeah.
And at the workplace, if someone cares, then you've got to find a way to resolve it. Now, the word thug, for years, you and I have talked about it, generally is thrown at NBA players. It's thrown at African-American football players. I guess Bill Romanowski got thug a few times. I'm not sure that he gets it as much as, say, Vontaze Burfict. But I think it... especially applies to guys who are dirty and over the top in the NBA. Now, I guess it's thrown around in hockey. I don't remember it being thrown around as much. Like, maybe Stu Grimson got it all the time that he's a thug. But there has been a certain connotation. Woj from ESPN said, hey, that generally, he believes, has been connected with African-American athletes.
Sure.
So we've got an okay boomer moment here, possibly, with a 66-year-old mostly young African-Americans making up the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we got a story.
And the best example, Steve, of where this comes from to me in the NBA, the NBA problem with the thug term, would be the dress code stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that was what it was. It was, hey, we don't want our guys looking like quote-unquote thugs. We want them, you know, to be in suits and all these other things. Like, and that was where it was a hot-button issue.
And you remember us covering that back in the early 2000s into, like, 2003-04. I got to look up the exact year that Stern went with that. You're right. Thug was used often. I thought that dress code thing was one of the more ridiculous things we've seen come down the pike. Well, yeah. But there were corporate interests from Stern's standpoint, and I guess he felt like the league was losing money and sponsorship. You know, a good portion of the fan base is white. I think you could stand up to them and say and educate them and go, just because someone's got, you know, saggy jeans and Timberlands on wearing a hood doesn't mean they're a thug. You shouldn't pass judgment on people like that. This should all be for education, but often that's not where it goes. Like, Ari's got a good example. We won't name the show, but there's a show over on Fox Sports Las Vegas that for years, one of the hosts talks about NBA players all the time and calls them thugs, and it bothers you.
It's also what it is. It's usually like LeBron coming off of like something philanthropic, and he's a thug still. Like, it doesn't...
LeBron James on that show was called a thug. Yes. LeBron James!
Yes, LeBron James.
Okay. And that's... So, see, folks, this is what we're talking
that
about.
That speaks volumes.
And listen, maybe this is not your experience. I can tell you, and Adam, you know this, that I make it a habit when I do go out, and I'm mostly out at bars, right? And we're watching sports, and we're watching the NBA, I make a habit of listening to the people around me.
Sure.
And you hear stuff like that. You just do.
All the time.
Yep.
You hear it all the time. There's no question. Now, sorry, go ahead.
Keep going.
No, I think, like, the fact of people saying it, it all the time in bars, and you hear it when you hear conversations when you're sitting in a sports book, you just hear awful, horrific things that people say, and it's disgusting and gross. But we just kind of know that that's out there. We know that there's people out there that are like that, many of them. The issue here, obviously, is that John Beilein is an NBA coach, and there's a different standard, and there's a different expectation. Those things can happen, but I do think the next level of this story, because everybody's going to feel how they feel about this, and nobody's really going to get to the bottom of it. He says that he meant slugs. He said thugs. Somebody's obviously upset about it. I think the issue is it came out. Somebody had said something. Somebody has an issue with it. This is going to be a simmering thing until it's kind of handled. But I do think the next level is who told. That is going to be a big story with this going forward.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. One, two, three.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan. You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on towards the weekend. NFL action on the way on Saturday and Sunday. You can hear it here on ESPN Las Vegas. Also, our Westgate Sunday football preview show. Different time this weekend. We'll go 90 minutes. 10 a.m. is when we start at Superbook USA. All right, let's get into the AFC side, and let's talk a little Titans. And Teron Davenport is with ESPN.com and joins Steve Cofield and Adam Hill here in Vegas. How are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going?
Good to be on. We're good. We have an important question right out of the gates here. First of all, how long have you been in Nashville? It's relatively new, right?
Yeah, I am just short of my second year here. This has been a great experience, though. I actually, you know, I love this city, man. It's awesome.
Does Nashville deserve to call itself Nash Vegas?
Well, I mean, look, I tell you this much. It set the tone for the NFL draft being there next year. So
Yeah. If
you walk down Broadway, I think you kind of get that Vegas feel. But there's nothing like Vegas. That's a different experience.
There you go. All right. Now we really like you, Teron. That was a good answer. I was in Nashville for UNLV and Vanderbilt. And I've been there before for hockey and then UFC in the past. It is. I'm with you. It's very, very cool. And actually, you're right. Nashville did set a standard that we're going to try to meet. I'm curious, though, if we're going to have as many people out, you know, on the streets for our draft as Nashville did, because, man, the turnout for that was just unbelievable.
Yeah, that draft was crazy. You're talking about, what, four or five blocks of shoulder-to-shoulder people And I think it was tremendous that that happened without any significant things happening, you know what I mean, fights or anything like that. So I tip my cap to the folks here in Nashville. They handled themselves correctly.
Were you making a sneaky reference to you were in Philadelphia before this, right?
Yes. I was. And you know what? In Philadelphia, there weren't any of those type of situations there, too. And, you know, I'll be honest, you know, as a guy who came up in the Philadelphia area, I was a bit nervous about that, you know, hoping the city would represent. But they ended up doing it well. And, you know, it was a good thing there. And it's just continuing the trend. And I look forward to seeing how Vegas is. I won't be there, but I look forward to seeing the videos and pictures, that's for sure.
Teron Davenport is on ESPN Las Vegas. He covers the Titans. All right, let's get into the Titans game here this weekend. Another, you know, big bully on the block across the way from the Titans. First of all, am I wrong for thinking maybe there could be a hangover with this Tennessee team after taking out the giant of the NFL in the Patriots?
Yeah, that's wrong as rain on a Saturday, man. I don't think there's any chance that this team will be hungover. I actually talked to Coach Vrabel after practice today about this team being able to keep the moment in front of them and not having anything get too big and just focusing in on what it is that their job is at hand. And he said that that's just a mindset. It's a mentality. It's something he brought from when he was playing for various coaches, especially Bill Belichick. And it's something that is going throughout that locker room. So, no, I don't think it'll be too big. These guys are dialed in. It's been a good week of practice, at least from what I've seen, and also just the conversation in the locker room. They're not looking ahead. They're dialed in for this one right now, and there will be no hangover.
So we'll get into this game, but I just first want to go back a little bit and ask, is it as simple as the turnaround being Tannehill goes in for Mariota and things take off for the Titans?
Well, that's kind of the start. What really happened with Ryan Tannehill is you saw a guy that was just more on schedule. The offense itself began to flow a little bit better. You didn't see as many penalties, and it wasn't just Tannehill, right? You had Taylor Lewan coming back from the four-game suspension and getting reinstituted back into the offensive line. That was a big thing. And then, you know, the explosion of A.J. Brown. He had a couple big games with Mariota, but he just really just took off and came into his own. He told me that Atlanta game, which is where he had two touchdowns, he said that was really when things started to slow down, and he really had that understanding that he could be a dominant player in this league.
So there was a lot of talk about Tannehill coming into the playoffs and, you know, how good they've been since he's been there. But as you mentioned, a lot of things were better. And second half of the season, Derrick Henry was typical second half of the season Derrick Henry. And last week, it was like that's all they said. We're just going to give him the ball every single time. And it worked. Like, why is their running game so effective with him?
Well, it starts with the commitment to it, right? I mean, this is a team I've seen them down 9 points late in the game and just continue to feed Derrick Henry the football. So kudos to Arthur Smith for doing what a lot of these coordinators don't do, and that's committing to it. But then on top of that, the mindset that they bring to the table as far as the offensive line, relishing the opportunity to fire off the ball and be the ones generating the contact and run blocking instead of catching it in pass pro. So that's a big thing. And then with Arthur Smith, the things that he's done to get the Derrick Henry out there on the boundary, you know, in the alley, he's one of the best runners once he gets to the second level. So if you can get him into that second level, chances are you're going to have a big play. So that's been a big thing about it. And it's just a rhythm and a groove that they're in. Everything is working. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the tight ends as well as the wide receivers blocking down the field. It's a team mindset, a team approach. All 11 are going out there and doing that thing.
So now they get Baltimore, and, you know, while New England looked vulnerable going in, despite, you know, everything that we know about them from the past, Baltimore really hasn't. So where can Tennessee take advantage of this team?
Yeah, I mean, it really goes back to running the football. That's going to be a theme of this phone call, frankly. And if you go back and watch the first Browns game, right, Nick Chubb ran all over them. A lot of it was working to the outside. So you mentioned that Ravens fans are going to say, oh, well, we didn't have L.J. Ford and this person, and that. Okay, well, let's go to week 13, and you look at the 49ers game, and the 49ers ran all over them. Now, they did win the game, the Ravens, that is. But Raheem Mostert, if you look at some of the stats and the charts, a lot of what he was able to do was outside. And that's what you have to do. You got to run outside, because this is a team that, you know, they have a couple ox strong defensive linemen in Brandon Williams and Michael Pierce. And Chris Wormsley is no slouch. So they have those interior gaps locked down. You have to get outside and find ways to do that. And that's what teams that have been able to be competitive with the Ravens have done. And, you know, it's all about shortening the game. That's really the main thing going against that defense. And you have to understand they're going to bring a lot of pressures, and they're going to have various coverages behind it. I actually broke one down on my Twitter page. You could check that video out on how they could go about attacking the pressure that the Ravens will bring.
Well, we talk a lot about the players. Last week, it was Bill Belichick. This week, John Harbaugh, two of the more, you know, established, well-known, successful coaches in the league. How about Vrabel, and what has he done to make himself or to make this team so good? And do you think he gets enough credit nationally for the job he's done?
No, I don't think he gets enough credit nationally. And, you know, we're going to call a spade here. And, I mean, I have no horse in the race, but the fact of the matter is, last week he out-coached Bill Belichick. I mean, I'm going to ask you, tell me the last time you saw an opposing head coach have Bill Belichick having a fit the way he did on the sideline. When you look at those consecutive penalties that he took to cut off over a minute off of the time clock. I think Vrabel has done an outstanding job, and it goes beyond just X's and O's. See, those of us that are there and watch him every day, what you're seeing is a guy that will literally go from position to position. I mean, I've seen him go to the receivers and work with them on stuff at the top of the routes, and then turn around and go to the linemen and work with them and go to the linebacker. There are so many things that he brings to the table. And then he surrounded himself with a really good staff. So, no, he doesn't get the credit. And I think when you look at the way they navigated their way through this whole Mariota to Ryan Tannehill change, that could have been disruptive in the locker room. Mariota is a guy that not only the fan base, but a lot of the players themselves, they are very much attached to. That locker room could have split. It never did, and they just kept on rolling, and things began to get better for them as Tannehill played better.
Teron Davenport's with us, Titans insider for ESPN.com. Did you actually get to ask Vrabel specifically about his moves of running down the clock and pissing off Belichick?
Yeah, I didn't personally ask him, but he was asked that in the press conference, and he kind of smiled, and, you know, he said it was something that they've seen before. But that's Mike Vrabel, right? You know what I mean? That dude will win the biggest of games, and he will talk about it like as if he just beat somebody in arm wrestling. You know what I mean? It's just, that's a part of what he brings to the table, the perspective. So we didn't get any colorful answer or anything like that. He just, you know, fact of the matter, said that it's something that he saw before and they wanted to go to.
By the way, what do you think of Lamar Jackson and the year he's had?
Hey, listen, Lamar Jackson, MVP, I don't think it should be a conversation. When you have a guy that can rush for 1,240 yards and then lead the league in touchdowns, look, man, touchdown passes, it's like the back in the day, you know, when I used to play Madden, you could create a player, like you could boost his different attributes. That's Lamar Jackson, right? And I personally feel like it's gratifying, because I know the things that he went through coming out of Louisville, despite what he did in college, and he was questioned as a quarterback. And now look at it. Everybody wants another Lamar Jackson. So what do I think about him? He's cool. He's poised. He's clutch. He's dynamic. He's polarizing. The guy really does it all, and I think he's someone that, I don't care who you are as a coordinator, you are going to stay up late trying to figure things out, and he will give you headaches.
Teron, very good spot, man. We appreciate it. If Titans win, we'd love to get you on down the road. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You got my number. Let's talk again.
There you go. Teron Davenport. He buttered us up at the beginning when he said he liked Vegas and he didn't want to go after, well, say that Nashville was better than Vegas. All right, on the way back, we'll get to where was Adam all week? He was gone all week. Absolute hashtag stick to sports moment. Dude, get back to sports. We're covering CES.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Pizza Rock is the spot tonight, or the spot tonight, at Green Valley Ranch, Pizza Rock, Pizza Rock, Pizza Rock. Happy hour's going on right now. Starts at 3 o'clock, goes until 6, leading into tonight's 7 o'clock puck drop. Kings taking on your Vegas Golden Knights. And you can watch the game over at Pizza Rock. Free beer if you wear your VGK jersey swag in there to Pizza Rock. Adam Hill is over at Pizza Rock. We got Joe Esposito coming up in about 15 minutes. We're going to talk to Bruce Pearl, the Auburn coach, next hour. All right, Adam, where the hell were you the first 3 days of the week? CES is in town, and you went. Did you do mostly sports angles or just kind of covering everything at CES?
I did a lot of – I wrote sports angles for my stories in the paper. I certainly was inundated with other technologies and checking things out. And I'll also say – like, I know – listen, we talk about this all the time. People love media complaining about their job when they get to do things like – you know, you go to CES. It, believe me, it sucks. It sucks to cover it. And I know people have to – I want to go see it. No, you don't. It sucks.
Why?
There's cool things, but listen, the traffic is a disaster. There is so many people that it's like logistically, it is a complete nightmare. And here's the thing, when I say media, because if you just go and you want to walk around and see stuff, that's cool. The media badge of that thing is awful to have on because you have every single person that has any kind of invention or thing to push, like chasing you down, asking to do interviews, and you know that I cannot say no. I did so many fake interviews this week. Like, I can't even begin to count the number.
There he is, the martyr. He can't say no.
But what are you going to tell these people that have, like, this dream of putting out this product or getting it out to market? Like, no, I'm not going to talk to you. I don't care.
Well, I watched a big conference like this from the past, and when Dunder Mifflin got out of control, they just brought over security. I'm catching up.
I love that you're catching up.
I'm catching up.
Was this at Career Day?
That was career day, and McKinnell was thrilled the other day when I said that I had just watched the dinner.
Wait, you got to the dinner party?
I got to the dinner party, yep.
Oh, my God. We have so much to unpack. It's one of the greatest episodes of any show in television
history. That's what he said as well.
It's so good.
Yep. So, did you see any technology that was really freaking cool?
The flying Uber. I think everybody's talking about that right now. Very cool.
Wait, what is that?
It's basically like a helicopter. It's like it's just going to fly around. I think they're going to debut in San Francisco in 2023 to kind of get around congestion.
Well, who can afford that?
I don't think it's going to be that bad.
What?
I mean, okay. For the can me or you probably know. But like if you really have to get somewhere, I think there'll probably be rides like around, you know, $100-$150. If you got to get around town.
Will they do the ride share? Like you'll have to share it with other people?
Yeah, the flying Uber pool.
Yes, Uber pool, that's what it
yes.
is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're in on that.
Okay.
It just zips around. It's pretty cool. And there is a ton of, you know, self-driving cars. Of course, they're already kind of out there, but like more and more. There's the prototype cars, the concept cars, the Sony concept car. Yes, Sony going into the car business. Just every kind of entertainment you could possibly ask for, including like screens all around, audio all around, just every innovation in entertainment.
Is that made for the road? Like, can normal people drive and be safe?
I mean, eventually, I think it'll probably prove to be a self-driving type thing because there's a steering. I mean, right now, I think it's for drivers. It's not out yet, obviously, at market, but yeah, I mean, eventually it would be you just sit in the car and just it's like a fully immersive, like, movie experience.
My God. The self-driving thing.
I know.
So let me get the show take correct on this. McKinnell is scared to death because he's afraid of robots taking over the world.
Yeah.
I think you're down with it, right?
I'm all in. There is obviously concern about hacking. Like, that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
If, you know, Iran right now gets into our grid and just has every car crash into each other, that's terrifying.
From my driving concerns, one... What's the point of honking at everyone if the car is self-driving?
Okay, fair.
Two, we can get around that if I can become a hacker and hack the self-driving car when they cut me off, then I'm in.
Then make somebody crash?
I'll just leave it at that.
Do you just want to jam their system and like make them listen to terrible music?
Sure, or just pull off the road slowly and shut down the car for like 3 hours.
Okay.
They're in such a hurry. You know what? You can pull into the shopping center and just sit there.
But don't you cut people off?
No.
I mean, I feel like you're an over-aggressive driver that gets mad at other aggressive drivers.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. But, I thought about it today because I saw someone with a real bad cutoff on the 95, which is it's a weird way to go to work. I was driving all around town today before I came to the station. Go figure. But I saw someone cut someone off, and then I thought about the way that I will aggressively change lanes. I accelerate into the lane change.
Yeah, you do.
Like, I'm not cutting you off. And now I'm also not going to ram into the car in front of me.
But you accelerate into everything.
But I make sure if I'm making an aggressive move to get in front of someone, I'm out of their way instantly.
Okay. I guess that's fair.
That will result in my transmission blowing at some point. But
well, you don't have to worry about that yet.
Yes.
Worry about that when it happens.
What about technology for the house? Because we talked about Bali yesterday.
Yeah.
And I thought day one you chronicled seeing Bali. What is Bali?
Bali is basically, I mean, I think the easiest way to describe it is the Amazon Echo, you know, Alexa, as it's commonly known, but it follows you around the house.
Why do we need that?
I don't think we do. but I mean, I'll get it. Obviously, I'll buy it. But it's it also, like, part of the push they were making in the promo video and the unveiling and also on the show floor at CES was that, like, one of the functions is that it can, like, take live video of your pet and, like, show you, hey, here's what your pet's doing. It's okay. Do you want to feed it? I can go feed it for you or whatever it can do. But, like, I feel it's a shaped like a ball and it's really little. Like, the pets are going to be playing. Like, I know my dog would just tear into this thing.
Yep.
So, like, I don't really understand the concept of the pet aspect of it.
Or they'll be completely terrified.
Well, that's true, too. But, I mean, that's funny. If your dog's just terrified of Bali.
It is kind of funny.
That's good.
I kicked a box in the backyard, and one of the stray cats that hangs around the house, he lost his S.
But
I had no idea he was there.
Oh, that's funny.
Scaring cats is fun. Scaring dogs is even more fun.
Yeah, true. I will also say the tethering of, you know, devices and, like, following you around like Bali does, it seems to be in a lot of different technologies. I wrote a story that's going to come out, I think, tomorrow, but it's part of it is about a golf cart that you put the remote in your pocket and then it follows you around the course, so it basically takes the place of a caddy. It carries your bag and just follows you wherever you go on the course, and it has built in, like, it doesn't go in the bunker, it doesn't go into the water, that sort of thing, but it just follows you around, which I don't know. I don't feel like we need this. Either you walk the course or you have a caddy or you get a car. Like, I don't think we need the robotic caddy following you, but it's there. I had it follow me around for a while yesterday. It was interesting.
Golfers really are lazy at times.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think when I'm exercising walking the course, first of all, a lot of people don't want to walk the course or carry their bag. But when I'm walking the course, I don't want to have to lift my left or right arm up and drag something throughout the course. It's too much.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's insane. So, but there's just so many technologies there. Most of them will never see the light of day.
How about you mentioned the people that you felt guilty because they were all pitching you because you, this is the only time you're really important in life. You were wearing a media badge.
Exactly.
How do most of the people come across? And is it kind of a circle, Jay?
I guess you could kind of say that. Like, there's just such a wide variety of them. I obviously won't get into the names of any companies or whatever, but there was one, the guy was like, he was like a kind of a smooth talking, like, swindler type, and just playing it up like he's got the greatest product ever. And like, hey, you're going to want to write about this because it's going to get you a lot of press to write about how great we are. Like, okay, bro. Thank you. And I definitely did a fake interview with him that story will never come out. I also, like, there was one, like, a father son, they're from Spain. And they came up with Bluetooth technology in a golf ball so that you basically will never lose your ball. You can just find it. Use an app on your phone. Find where your ball is. Go address it.
Okay. Okay. That's good.
Of course.
Because I'm slowly going blind, and all I do is rip the ball off the course.
Yeah.
And I give up. I mean, I'm good on a bad round, like, 12, 15 lost balls.
For sure. And Steve, I wrote about them because I thought it's an awesome product. I think this is cool.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, like, it's just a father and a son. They clearly had, like, this dream. They made it happen. And as I'm talking to them, I realize they really don't have a plan.
Oh, no.
in that at some point, some other companies will be like, yeah, we're making this. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You guys
are
out.
They're just going to get their idea stolen.
Right. And so they've spent, like, it was clear to me they spent, like, everything they had to make this and to get a booth at CES and to try to display it and, like, make it, you know, hey, this is us. We're announcing us. We're here. And I just feel like they're just not going to make it. And then you're like, that sucks. These poor guys.
Why can't they go, what's the Cuban show where they pitch the products?
Yeah, Shark Tank.
Yeah, why don't they go on Shark Tank?
Maybe maybe they couldn't get on. I don't know. It's a cool product, and it's a great one that I think could be huge, but I'm sure somebody else will just make it.
Word of the day is thug. We'll get back to the discussion of the word thug. John Beilein apparently threw it at his Cavalier players, and we'll hear from Stephen A. Smith, who was not happy about this issue at all.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.